You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, friends. Caleb and I are going to be celebrating our 3-year anniversary of Equity One, and we want you to join us. We're going to be doing a live show on August 15th at 4 p.m. Eastern, where we'll be joined by some of our favorite guests from the past. We'll have a signature Equity One cocktail, the games and segments that you know and love, plus some other exciting things that you'll have to wait and see. So stay tuned on our social media at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and Facebook to get all the latest information leading up to the live show. We hope you'll join us on August 15th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Broadway Podcast Network Town Hall. See you then. Cheers. This is Equity One, Broadway's happy hour.
Pour yourself a drink and join us as we chat about life, theater, and everything in between.
I'm Elliot Maddox.
And I'm Caleb Dickey. Join us for your Equity One.
Oh. Yes, look at that artwork.
Cheers.
Hi, Caleb.
Hey, Elliot.
Welcome to this week's Broadway Podcast Network Happy Hour. I'm Elliot.
And I'm Caleb.
And we are the hosts of Equity One, Broadway's Happy Hour. Here on Broadway Podcast Network Happy Hour, we sit down with some of your favorite podcasters and chat with them. And we have a really special episode today. We got a full house. We
full
have
house.
A bevy of beauties from Bleeding Love, the fabulous musical podcast that's on the Broadway Podcast Network. We have the lyricist, Harris Duran, the producer, Katie Rosen, and then two of the performers, Annie Golden and Tony Vincent, with us. And they're going to pop in soon.
Yeah, I know. Here they come. Here we are. Yay.
We're here.
Yes.
Hi. No,
lest I forget, the among the many titles, Harris also directed Bleeding Love. It's really quite an undertaking. It's really, really exciting. Like, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Oh my God,
it's exciting.
Course.
Yeah.
It's our pleasure. Do we want to bring in another one of the producers? We also have another one of the producers here. Steve Saporito is with us.
Oh.
Come on in.
Come on in,
Steve.
Oh, just kidding.
Oh, not yet.
He's planning something big for later. How are you all doing in this crazy time?
Surviving, keeping busy with this, which has been taking up all of our time.
Yes, yeah. Not only exactly. Getting it all together, but it came out very recently. Now you can listen to it all in one foul swoop wherever you get your podcasts.
Binge that shit.
Yeah,
shit? Is this like a cursing zone or not?
Absolutely. Oh,
yes. Okay, binge that shit
and subscribe, rate and review so that we can bump up the charts.
As always, subscribe, rate, and review. We wouldn't, our listeners wouldn't do anything but subscribe, rate, and review here.
Excellent, thank you.
Yeah. What are you all drinking with us today? I'm having a Tom Collins. It's become my drink of choice. It's like so hot outside. I took a very sweaty walk today, and I was like, I need something refreshing.
Is that a Rent reference?
It's always a Rent reference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Santa Fe.
I'm about to open it. Oh, I didn't make it. Oh, I didn't make a good noise, but it's a lager. And this one is from Dayton, Ohio. It's a Trotwood lager. So.
Oh, local. Okay.
Local, you know, support local.
We love that. Harris? Mm-hmm.
This is actually homemade limeade. I apologize that it's non-alcoholic.
I'm impressed.
But I made a limeade. I did it myself. I boiled water and sugar so it would melt, and then I squeezed limes, and here we are.
You made your own simple syrup.
Mm-hmm. That's and incredible.
It was simple. It really was.
That's why they call it simple syrup.
I have simple syrup in my drink too.
Ooh, what are you having?
A gin gimlet.
Oh. In my fancy, that used to be my favorite.
It's in my fancy cooler cup. So you keep these in the freezer and it always stays cold.
Tell us about that cup.
So this cup was given to me by my best friend, Beth Chamberlain, who is, she played Beth Raines on Guiding Light for 20 years. She's a pretty phenomenal actress herself. And we drink martinis together. And she gave this to me so that my martinis are always cold.
I love a freezer specific glass. I have a really nice rocks glass that like the rock, like the ice freezes in a diagonal in the glass.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It apparently like cools it better. Like it cools it while you drink it. It's really nice.
And it probably helps with the pour or something.
Something. I don't know. Yeah. It was a lovely, I use it all the time. I'm one of those people that like drinks and doesn't know anything, but enjoys to drink.
You know? It works whether you know how to do it or not.
I know, exactly. You can. It has the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Steve, do you want to join us? He wants in on the action.
Steve!
Hello.
How are you?
Another
nice
one of
you guys.
Nice to meet you. Nice Thanks meet so you much too. For coming on the show.
I appreciate it. Steve, thank you for promoting Bleeding Love. It's like been an awesome, amazing journey for us. You know, Harris brought me into it, met Katie through it, and we've really become this crazy, like, Brady Bunch kind of family, like all thrown together. And just really happy to have the opportunity to get it out on the Broadway Podcasting Network. Who knew that a global pandemic would be an amazing thing for us to get the
It's definitely, we're going to talk so much about the show, the timing was, I'm sure stressful and made things a little more difficult, but wow, you really, it's almost too good. I think I might think you just did this on purpose. Like Bleeding Love made coronavirus so that it would be as timely as it is.
You know, was Harris in China somewhere in January? I don't know.
Well, you know, who knows? Only time will tell.
Yep.
Steve, are you having a beverage with us?
Yeah. I'm doing a Manhattan. It's a Bullet Manhattan. So
love Bullet. Rye or bourbon?
Bourbon.
Yeah.
Kentucky bourbon. You know, I wasn't drinking Bullet for a while because I also manage Stephen Trask, who lives in Lexington. And on a trip, we drove to the Bullet distillery on a Sunday, which was about an hour away. And we got there 5 minutes too late for the last tour. And they wouldn't let us in on the tour.
Boo.
So for a little while, I was off Bullet. But it is good bourbon, so.
It's so good. You know, I'm from Lexington. I actually just came from Lexington, spending a month and a half there. And it was such a great bummer that all of the distilleries were closed. Because it's my favorite thing to do when I'm home is just go on all the tours over and over.
I love Kentucky. I've spent a ton of time there.
Oh, really?
I made a movie called Beauty Mark that we filmed outside of Louisville, downtown Louisville.
And Kentucky native Laura Bell Bundy was
She's in my movie. Yeah, Laura Bell's in my movie.
I grew up in the same town, same dance studio. Yep.
Yes. Yes. Laura Bell's amazing.
The best.
She really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Kentucky. It's nice, always nice to be home, but it's funny when, you know, in this time, it's like the things we love about like our places are kind of all like shut down and taken away. So it's like, oh, this is a little bit less fun when there's not all this exciting stuff going on. What's keeping you all entertained right now? You know, you've got Bleeding Love out there, of course, doing a lot of like press and all those things, keeping it, getting people listening. But what are you doing when you're like sitting down with a cocktail, relaxing for the day? What are you watching?
Are you guys watching We're Here on HBO?
I have to watch the new episode.
Now I have to write it down or else I'll forget.
We're Here. Like, we're here, we're here, get used to it. it is like three drag queens from RuPaul. So it's Bob the Drag Queen, Shangela, and... Oh, what's the third?
Eureka O'Hara.
Eureka. And it's sort of like, what was that movie? The drag queen movie in the
Priscilla, 90s? Queen of the Desert.
No, the bad one. What was the bad one?
Oh, the bad one.
Yeah, the other one. It was like Priscilla, but it's sort of like Tu Wong Fu, where you have the drag queens and they go to the middle of nowhere and then they inspire the town. So it's real life, but they're going, but it's filmed like a documentary, and it is like gut-wrenching. Like, it's such a beautiful, beautiful show, and I highly recommend it.
Is it a documentary or not?
I mean, reality TV is documentary, right? But this feels more like a documentary film somehow. It's somewhere in between.
Yeah, it feels like the only thing I can really like compare it to is Queer Eye, but it feels so much more like
evolved. More important. Well, because Bob the drag queen is just like grounded.
They're all like, so good.
And they're like, we will handle your entire life problems, hold them in our hands and cry with you. It's amazing.
A lot of and great stories, like really interesting people, a lot of like trans representation and interest, just interesting stories. It's really, really worth a watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I made my senior film in college on drag queens. So I have like a unique fascination with them. So I'm definitely going to watch.
What was the title?
God, I can't remember. It was so long ago, but I have it somewhere. But it's it's on beta or something. I'm old.
Well, I know. I directed a documentary about Squeezebox, which was the rock and roll drag club in New York City for the 90s. And there was a film festival that was interested in doing it as a retrospective. And they were like, well, what's your Vimeo? Like, send us your Vimeo link. And I'm like, we did it about 7 or 8 years ago. And I'm like, we don't have a Vimeo link. And if I have to give you a list of all the festivals it played in, I'm going to have to fire up our MySpace page.
I made a short film like 10 years ago, and I like about 2 years ago digitized it and put it up on Vimeo, but it's a process.
It is.
But I want to answer your guys' question, because what I've been doing in my downtime is really sort of interesting, because it relies on my two children. So I have a 12-year-old daughter who's obsessed with Broadway. She's very much a tween fan, and we saw Beetlejuice 3 times. And
thank you.
It was too bad, because now that I meet you, because she really wanted to go backstage, but of course. So anyway, so she decided she wanted to watch all the Marvel movies, not in release order, but in chronological order. So that's been her quarantine viewing. And then my son, he's 15, but he did Band of Brothers. So we started that like 2 nights. Band of Brothers was a great thing for him to watch, because it's like history, but it's beautiful and like it's so interesting. So it's so far from podcasting and Broadway, and both of those are like so tangential.
Yeah.
It's a nice escape from all the other stuff, from work.
Right. Well, because otherwise all day, every day is Bleeding Love and Podcast Network.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
Every day.
24/7.
It's true.
As you know.
It has been the engine that's really made this thing go. It's she's been the real heart and soul of the whole thing. It's been wonderful to watch her work too.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
It's always interesting. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize how much work and how much time it takes to get any project on its feet, especially a musical, and especially one that, you know, faces time challenges, and you know, you've got to figure out on your feet like how to make things work. And you really build a family with those people that you're creating something new with.
It's funny. I was actually saying to our future guest, Tony, that like, it's weird to have this like intense theater bond of like rehearsal process and like going through the whole thing and never having met someone. Like I've never even met Arthur and Jason, who are two of the writers of the project. Like,
wow.
We've only ever met on the digital screen.
Wow.
That's so
now.
I can't wait for this to be over so we can have a cast party finally. Yeah.
Yes, until we can finally have drinks with everyone.
Yeah.
Like for real. We'll do this again, but like at Sardi's.
Speaking of, yes. I think we're going to Steve, for now, we're gonna take you out and we can bring you back in later, but we want to bring in Tony Vincent and Annie Golden.
Ooh. Who are let me just say this. The really great thing is that I'm old enough to have been a Shirts fan way, way back in the day. Yes. And I've seen Annie play at CBGB's. And the last time I saw the Shirts play, I was randomly walking on the boardwalk in Seaside Heights, New Jersey, and at the bar on the beach, it said the Shirts, and I was like, we're going in there to my friend. And that was like 19.
Yes.
So it was very exciting for me to have Annie as part of this process.
It's always exciting to get to kind of like make those moments and work with people that you've always enjoyed seeing.
Absolutely.
What they do. Yeah.
All right, have fun, guys.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
All right.
Oh my gosh, here we are.
Ooh. Hi, guys.
The gang's look at that hair.
Hey, hey.
Oh, my goodness. Hello, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
What are you? Are you imbibing with us today?
I'm going to really throw you a curve here.
Nice.
Yes. It's interesting.
I have two kids to, you know, contain with.
It's interesting that you went for not only A&W, but diet A&W.
Diet.
Mm-hmm. You get the pleasure without, you know, we're in quarantine here.
So yeah.
You gotta, the push and pull.
Yeah.
Make it last.
I'm a big Barks fan myself.
Okay. I can't find it here. I live in Nashville right now. So.
Oh, understood.
But I'm with you. I'm right there with
Barks
you.
Barks has bite. Yeah.
Yeah.
Annie, thanks for joining us.
Hi, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Elliot and Caleb.
We love your glasses. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking, well, I've been waiting backstage for so long. I might need Pinot Grigio on ice.
Oh, yes. Delicious. You know, we have a rule here at Equity One, which is if your glass is never empty, it's still just one.
Exactly.
So mm-hmm. You keep on refilling. It's just one drink as long as you're not a... We're so excited to have you. I just finished listening to Bleeding Love today. And I'm so excited to get to talk to you all about it. It's really, really exciting. Great, really great work on it. It's really cool to have you all here. What's keeping you all entertained right now? What are you watching in this quarantine time?
Annie, go ahead.
I had a friend and a family member say, "Are you watching Gaga?" one night, and I said, "I'm watching Casablanca."
Yes,
classic.
Turn to classic movies. I'm trying to ignore that this is happening. Mm-hmm. So just my mainstay of old movies, old TV shows. I can't deal. I live in the past, like Madame Floyd. Johnny, can you shake your head?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it a little closer than the last time we saw each other.
Very in vogue. Thanks. Right now. Well, Tony, what are you...
inappropriate with our character in the show.
Yeah, it's very Bleeding Love.
Skinhead, yeah. Yeah. What are you watching right now?
This is going to sound really lame. I'm an audio guy. I like making records, and I'm absorbing like the pretty intensive production tutorials right now. I know it sounds really silly and corny, but
no.
I like if my brain isn't like challenged habitually, I feel, especially in a situation like we're dealing with now, I feel very lethargic. So if I'm not like exercising and doing something cerebral, I feel like I'm like something's moving past me. Like I'm like being left behind, and I just can't deal with that.
Totally. I mean, I think we're all kind of figuring out like what our way of like just getting through the day is. And it, you know, sometimes it's just like sit on the couch and watch your movies. And sometimes it's like, I need to like learn something and do something today. And everyone's like balancing that, figuring it out for themselves. It's such a wild time, but that's not nerdy at all. I like constantly watch cooking videos. So that's
I'm kind of a nerd anyway. So I just wear eyeliner as a sort of to balance it out.
Now you were saying you love production and all those things. I noticed you're, are you in like a legitimate studio right now?
Well, this behind me, my wife is a voiceover actor, so this is hers, and I'm actually at her studio. Mine has been taken apart and it's being rebuilt at the moment. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. Mm.
So this is like where she's like, she'll do voiceovers inside this box. And she has a computer that runs outside. That's what I'm using right now. I'm using her computer, but it's tethered into what she can see inside.
So fancy.
High tech.
I know. I think we're all wishing we had like a nice setup right now. Like my boyfriend, as we started, like came in and like plugged in our like front light because he's watching and he's like, "Oh, let me just fix it." Like, and we need to figure out a way to make things. We're all just figuring out how to do all this from home, and we will definitely.
But it's great, you know. I mean, I've had a chance to do a couple of really cool production things and sing on some really cool YouTube things. We did a. There's a version of We Are the Champions that just went out, I think, last week for all. I was contacted because I had worked with this drummer, and there's a filmmaker out of, I'm trying to think of where he's out of, Connecticut, I think. Anyway, he asked me to sing this, and because he knew my relationship with Queen, and it's basically a dedication for all of those people that are on the front lines who are really, you know, making a huge difference and sacrificing everything that they have for people that are ill right now. It's a pretty powerful piece of footage. I mean, a lot of still images of just these vacant places like the Vatican and the Louvre and just with no people in them. And then it sort of transposes into images of people that are, you know, really in the trenches and helping people. It's pretty spectacular.
The American Idiot one you did too was really cool.
Ah, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many like things like that happening right now where we're all just kind of able to collaborate in ways that we're not always able to, like with scheduling and not being in the same place. Everyone's getting a little bit more creative right now, which
you
has
wonder,
been
you wonder long how excuse me, you wonder how long this kind of creativity has to be the mainstay, you know?
I know. Ooh. I know. I'm hoping not too long, but it's good.
I don't know.
I know. Annie, those are such beautiful flowers behind you.
Thank you. I was positioning my computer so you could see them.
Annie, where are you at?
I'm in Brooklyn. I'm always in Brooklyn.
We love Brooklyn.
Yeah, if I'm not at Sardi's.
Are you missing the actor menu?
I'm missing hugs. I have a themed posting series on my Instagram at the Annie Golden, and it's hashtag I miss hugs and handshake. So I'm posting pictures of people hugging, whether it's my family or celebrities or, you know, opening nights or whatever. I'm posting photographs just of people hugging. I miss that. So that's what I'm doing. Yeah, I totally miss it. I totally miss, you know, just being at the bar and I know everybody there. And between Sardi's and 54 Below, I could be like a bag lady who lives there all the time. You know, people are like, that lady's here all the time. And it's like, no, I'm just going to go on in a minute, you know, so.
Yeah. I know, I miss our haunts. Now, being home, we're with our we're around our surroundings a long time. Anyone have any good neighbor stories?
Annie, you have a good neighbor story.
Oh my god. Today is her birthday, actually. She turns 89.
Oh wow.
And you saved her life. So tell everyone about it.
Shall I say? Okay.
Yeah.
So I've been in my building for decades, and one of my neighbors who today turns 89, I would look in on her occasionally, and when I would go to the supermarket, I would do two lists. I would get Estelle list, and I would get my list, and I would go and fill my shopping cart to the max, because she cooks at home, I don't, so it was mostly her list. Anyway, Easter Sunday, I was with my family having a home-cooked meal, and my sister lives 20 minutes within walking distance of me, and she's there with her at the backyard, so we can barbecue.
So nice.
That's nice.
So I get a text from Estelle's daughter saying, and her daughter's in Arizona, and I get a text saying, have you spoken to mom today? She's not answering the phone. So I run home, 20 minutes, I ring the bell, I have my keys, I can't open the door, the door is bolted from the inside. I hear phone ringing and not being answered. So I call the super, and the super says, it's bolted from the inside, so the keys aren't going to do you any good. Why don't we go up to the neighbors above? I'll introduce you now. We're both in masks and gloves. You're not supposed to be with people, and now right. I'm introduced to my neighbors above Estelle. And the super rings the bell and says, listen, we have an emergency. Your neighbor downstairs, we need to get in. Can she come in and climb through the window and go down the fire escape?
Oh my God. Someone
into my seat. Edge to
frozen. I climbed down the fire escape. Luckily, the window was not locked, and I opened the door, and I opened the window, and I climbed in saying, is her legs moving? So I was like, woo! Okay. And so she had suffered a stroke.
Oh my God.
In the night. Yeah. So so I called her daughter back and said, I'm in. Meanwhile, my super was at the door banging and ringing. She wanted to know what had happened. I opened the door. I say to her, she goes, is she up? I said, yeah, she's up. So she left. So I called the daughter in Arizona. I called 911. I thanked them for being there. I called the 911 dispatch. I called the EMT dispatcher. I was switched to her. I thanked her for being there. They sent an ambulance. I packed her bag with her wallet, her phone, her dentures, her bridge, her meds. It was crazy. And then when I sent her off and she was safe and sound, and we caught her in time because she's out of rehab now in Westchester, and today is her 89th birthday. Ugh. But I just sat on my couch and had a good Easter Sunday cry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My God.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Thank God you were able to get in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because my soup, I couldn't think of anything. The door, I couldn't open it. My super didn't want me to call 911 because she has to answer to the landlord. And yeah. She said, no, they'll break the door. And I'm like, yeah, we'll break the door. And she said, why don't I introduce you to the people upstairs? And you go into their apartment. And so heroes all around. And Estelle is 89 today. And she's going through rehab, and yay, Estelle. Happy birthday, Estelle Pachter.
Oh, my God.
And if people are surviving COVID at 103 and 108, then Estelle is a youngin'.
Seriously.
She just had a stroke, so she'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that she's okay.
Yes.
And happy birthday. Have any of you ever had to climb through your neighbor's apartments to get to? I have. I've had to go into my neighbor's apartment. I have. My door just stopped. It never locked itself. And then one day I was doing laundry down in the basement and I closed the door and I couldn't open it. It was locked. It's just like old door. So I knocked on my neighbor's door. Luckily, I was pretty friendly with them, but I was like, can I climb through your window and climb into my apartment?
I have a story. So Rebecca Naomi Jones, who plays Lolly in Bleeding Love, was my roommate for a few years. And I love her to death. I love her. Yes, we were roommates.
No way.
Yes. We were roommates.
Why didn't I know this till now?
You know, we were roommates. We laughed and laughed and laughed. But she got locked out of the house. And like our we never gave the key to our soup or anything. And so she had to go upstairs through the neighbor's house. And then the super had to break into our security gates and into the window for her to get back in. And still to this day, there's a, it's a heart-shaped Rebecca Love on my window.
Amazing.
Because of Rebecca, who I love.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's just you got to do what you got to do to get into
your apartment. Yeah, you got to get back in. Yeah.
I've actually learned how to break in. If the bolt's not done, I've learned how to do the credit card. So now I'm kind of like, I'm very like a thief in the night now. I know how to do that on doors now. So it's a strange talent that I have.
But also I recommend, so in New York, I don't know about where everyone else, but there's a service called Key Me, and they're not sponsors, but they have little kiosks. And what you do is you like, when you make a copy of your key, you also like create a profile and it saves your key so that you could go to a thing, log in, and then be like, print my front door key or like print my deadbolt key.
That's a great idea.
Smart.
I'm gonna one up that because I'm in the suburbs and I was telling you guys about my kids and we were like very tired of my kids like not having keys or losing keys and blah, blah, blah. So we finally got a punch-in keypad. They literally only have to remember the keypad and they can get into the house. I mean, life a lot easier.
Yes.
That's amazing. Like so many, lot less keys.
You cannot do that in New York City, though, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No.
Maybe if you have an entire brownstone
or
something. But, anyway. Well, we hope to get Annie back. But we start every interview at Equity One by asking our guests what first got them interested in the arts when they were young people. So let's just try and go down the line. Let's start with Katie.
What got me interested in the arts? I don't know. I mean, I grew up outside the city. So we went to a lot of Broadway. And I recently have been trying to remember, like, what was my first Broadway show? And how did I get interested in arts? But my mom had girls. And she told us that girls don't play sports. We dance. So we all danced. And did a lot. Yeah.
Whatever.
It's true. I hope she's watching.
Whatever.
Yeah. So I always thought I wasn't an athlete until I sort of became one as an adult. We danced and we saw a lot of theater. And that was, I think, how I became interested in the arts.
What was the first like cast recording that like rocked your world?
So I mentioned this recently too. Like I just pulled out my my published book that I wrote in third grade that's called I Can Make It to Cats. And awesome. It's a play that I wrote and I directed my friends in it. And like I can really picture my elementary school downstairs and the audience and my friends performing this play that I wrote. I mean, I was in third grade and I have the book now sitting on my desk, like reminding me of my, like what brought me here.
That's oh my God. Awesome. That's amazing. Cute.
I love that. Yes.
Producing from the very beginning.
Yes.
Totally. And I don't think, I'm always a behind the scenes girl for sure.
Put it all together. Annie, what about you? What first got you interested in the arts when you were young?
Well, my influences are Judy Garland, Frank Sinatra, David Bowie. So it's all those pop artists who do straight film and musicals and concerts. And so it was that. I mean, it was really just, you know, loving Judy's Garland and Russell. I think that was my first Broadway bio. Which was the revival of Hair mm-hmm. in 1977 at the Biltmore Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, you know, and Annie loves the work of the Judy's Garland, Holiday, and Miss Rosalind Russell.
Oh my God, I love that.
So, yeah, it was just people who were pop stars and they did crossover stuff.
Yeah,
and that
there was a. There was so much crossover then. So much like, yeah. Yeah, so much like musical theater stars, these big musicians, these jazz artists that did movies and had number one hits. It's when, you know, a Broadway tune would be like a household hit, yeah. You know. So Tony, what about you?
I was four and I heard a Beatles record. My dad had a pretty big vinyl collection and I heard Hard Day's Night and I was like, whatever this is, I want to be a part of. And so when I was young, I used every avenue that I could to perform. So I was a singer when I was really, really young and I started taking drums when I was about seven. But I wound up using any stage that I possibly could to be a better communicator. I don't think I was conscious of that per se, but that got me involved in musical theater. So I was doing, you know, rock and roll and like Battle of the Bands. But at the same time, I was doing community theater and civic light opera and that sort of thing. So to me, it was like nothing was...
My God. Katie's mom saw me do...
It's okay. She wrote LOL too.
It's great.
At least she's supporting me now.
So, look, you never know who's tuning in. All right. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Like, because you, Tony, you and Annie actually kind of have similar kind of stories in that you started in bands making music and then that led into a more like theatrical career. I think that's a really interesting path.
You know what? I don't know if Annie will agree with me on this, but I think there's something, and this isn't to poo-poo people who aren't musicians, but I think something happens when you play an instrument that you're connected with the music at a much deeper level. It's not just a lyrical thing. It's not just a story. It's a much deeper grounding foundation of a musical understanding, of a feel.
Yes.
That, do you know what I'm saying, Annie?
Yes. And you're participating. You're invested in a different way. And I don't play an instrument, so... Yeah. So I understand what you're saying as far as theater is concerned.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
And I'm not poo-pooing anybody who doesn't, but I think that's what made the cast of American Idiots so special is that so many of us were musicians.
Yes.
That it was unapologetically rock and roll because that's what we all do when we're not on a Broadway stage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I immediately think of someone like Lena Hall that like is just like
absolutely.
I just think there's something in that, like, not only that like connection that you have with the music, but also you're able to like hold a room of any size if you're like a musician in that sense, like, and it's a different thing, but it communicates really, it translates really powerfully in theater.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring up Lena. We're both the two of us are the voices of the Doggone Band in a animated show called Nature Cat.
Oh,
so go check it out.
Okay,
Lena was on the original demo of Bleeding Love.
I did know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
What? It's a small world.
It's the smallest world. Paris, what about you? What first got you interested in the arts?
So I wanted to be an astronaut, and then the Challenger exploded. So I was like, that's not going to work out. And so then I wanted to be a ballet dancer in like second grade. I wanted to be the next Baryshnikov, and no one really helped me. So I was like, I guess I'll be an actor instead. And so in fourth grade, I decided I want to be an actor, and that's what I did and pursued for a really long time. And I always wrote.
That's why you're such a great director.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. And I wrote since I was a kid, and I've always sort of written and acted and directed and produced and sort of been my sort of life's journey. And growing up, we had two cast albums. One was Annie and one was Hair. And so Hair was like my big obsession and was my dream. And in my early 20s, I ended up being Claude, and the Actors Fund did a one night only concert of Hair, where I was Claude, and that's where I met Annie.
No way.
Yes. And Annie's been in a ton of my work over the years. And yeah, that's how we met, is through Hair.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
I feel like those moments happen all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve was talking about going to see the shirts and, you know, now working with Annie on this. And I feel like we all kind of have those moments, especially like, you know, I think that what's important for anyone that wants to pursue a career in the arts is that you have to just kind of follow your own, you know, you got to stay your own course and do the things that are like ringing right with you. And that's going to bring you the kind of people that you want to work with, which are probably oftentimes the people you've looked up to or, you know, have been a part of the things that have inspired you. I think that that's something that is always good to remind everyone, if they're interested, and not even just in the arts. That's just like life, you know, like attracts like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about Bleeding Love a little bit. And, you know, I want to talk, how did that whole process begin? Like, start us from the very beginning.
So the very, very beginning was, so Jason Schaefer, who's the book writer, he had been writing, he gave himself an assignment of where he was writing down a list of like everything emotional, just like random images. And he and I knew each other because I was in his work as an actor. He is a playwright. Arthur Bacon, who wrote the music to this, he and I had written this other musical, Salvage, that Annie actually was on the demos for and Rebecca was in a concert of. And Jason loved it, and we decided we wanted to write something together. And he pitched me Bleeding Love, this idea that he had, which I was not sure that I wanted to write at the time. And like a year later, I ended up coming back and be like, what was that thing with the rose? and so then he sent it to me. He sent me this like 20-page document with all of these ideas. And he and I worked with him to sort of narrow it down. You know, and I just asked him questions until he himself narrowed it down into something that was like ready to go before we wrote any music. Because the biggest flaw, I would say, of any like musical theater writing is that you don't figure out the book before you start writing the music. Because once you write music, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's really hard to change, especially if the song you should have written is like 5% different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like the idea should have been like this. And it's impossible to rewrite. So what you got to do is you got to figure out the book first. So we did. And then we wrote the songs. And then we very quickly got into NAMPT right after we had written it. And so did a concert there. And Sarah Stiles played the same role in NAMPT. And then over the years, it's been developed at these different places. And then a few years ago, so we had this big production in Denmark. And so we took the orchestra tracks from that production and did an American demo with this wonderful cast that we have, with Tony and Annie and everyone. And so we had this phenomenal demo. And then when this COVID happened, we were like, okay, this is the time for Bleeding Love, a musical about a world that's so too dangerous that you can't go out of your apartment. And so we asked our cast, you know, the same cast from the demo, is like, are you available to record the demo? And they were like, we're available.
And then it moved really fast.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like Broadway shut down on March 13th and we were recording by March 28th. Like it was like 10 days later, we were recording and moving this forward.
Yeah. But we did did an entire day rehearsal process and then an entire day recording. And then there was a bunch of pickup days and And it was crazy because it's over this of where like the sync is off, right? Like none of this is actually in sync. And so I directed it, but I also edited it because it just was a sprawling nothing, right? That needed to be put together in, you know, as the actors, because my background is an actor, I teach acting, like all of this stuff, I'm able to channel like what the actor meant as far as their timing, you know? And so that's why it sounds so good, is actually because I was able to just respect their initial intention, which was not there because of how it was recorded. It just was random tracks, you know?
It's so huge, like such a big undertaking. And I think like, first of all, I quick like logistics question. How long from when you first were like, what, remind me about that idea with the rose to like the production in Denmark and then to now?
2010 was, hey, what was that rose thing? NAMPT was 2012, and then Denmark production was 2015. We did these demos, I think, in 2016.
Wow.
And then here we are. Yeah.
So and for then, for those of you who are not good at math, that's like 10 years.
10 years.
Long time.
And we were at good speed. We were at Amos. We did a lot of, there was a lot of development. Yeah.
Katie.
Well, what I was going to say is like I ran into Harris last summer at the now sadly deceased Nymph, and the general manager for the show that I was working on sort of like turned to Harris and was like, what happened to that musical you were working on? And Harris said to me, Katie, I really think you would like this musical. So it was like August, mid-August, he and I met to talk about like what the show was, and I immediately fell in love with the show, and I was like, Harris, we're making this show happen. And we started meeting with general managers, we started like sort of looking at what the show would be, and then we were so blessed to have Kent Nicholson and Steve Separato come on board and work with me as producers, and we sort of became this team. And and we were like, and about mid-February, we start talking about like a concert version. Do we want to do a 54 Below? Like, how do we get people to hear this incredible project without like doing another developmental piece, because it really doesn't need development? It's a finished musical. March 5th, I met with Alan, and it was basically like, I love musicals, I love podcasts, how can we work together? And he was like, well, we really want to do a musical podcast. And I was like, huh. And then we had a conference call. I talked to the guys. I was like, we have this option to like explore. And then Harris and I were on the phone. I think we spoke to Alan and Dory before the Broadway shut down. I think we spoke to them like March 10th.
We did. And I was like, I don't know. I'm old school. I'm old. Do people do that? And then as soon as COVID happened, it was like, let's do that. And now yes.
And we've been so blessed by the Broadway Podcast Network. They've been completely made the whole thing happen. They like sent mics to everyone's homes. They did all the teching. They did like they've obviously done all of our distribution. They've been incredible partners for us. And so, and as you guys know, like they're great partners. So we wouldn't have been able to do it without them. And now everyone around the world, and we've had fan art from Belgium, like, can you hear our musical?
So cool.
Amazing.
That's so cool to get to like have that reach. I know that like that's the gift of this time that we're in, is to be able to connect in ways that we hadn't before with all kinds of people from everywhere. What was it like once there was this, you know, idea to do this as a podcast? Tony and Annie, what were the challenges in doing this musical, making this happen with your characters from home remotely, you know, not in a room with the energy of your fellow performers? I mean, what was that like?
Tony?
Well, I think though, we just, for some clarification, we did, like Harris already said, we did have a rehearsal process. So we had this sort of rekindling of what we had prior, you know, done prior in the studio and that sort of thing. And then to experience it on a screen, to me, and I'm speaking, you know, on my own perspective here and how it felt, it was like we were all in the same room. I just had the, you know, a comfortable chair to sit on instead of like a really cold, you know, fluorescent lit rehearsal room. But it felt like we were all on the same page. And, you know, Harris is such a gifted director. For some reason, you know, it just didn't feel removed to me. And his because he knows the intent of the actors, and God bless him for being such a great editor as well, it was a very cohesive, easy situation, apart from the delay in recording and some technical stuff that you know, we had to deal with. Apart from that, it felt incredibly synergistic, in my opinion. It's just how it felt from an actor's perspective. Annie, what are your thoughts? She agreed with everything I just said.
Yeah, every single thing. Every single thing. Now's the time to say more things for her to agree with.
Yes. Annie has run up a little bit into this during our recording, and she's been an incredible, like, just go with the flow, figure things out. She's now a tech genius. She loves her Yeti mic. Not to speak for you, Annie, but
yes, totally. I agree. Aside from our brilliant engineer Alan Seals, everything you said.
Great. Everything. Well, I want to I'm going to ask a question, and then I'm actually going to bring in Alan to kind of like roundtable this, because I want to hear about the I want to hear about the process of, you know, you've decided it's happening. You're going to make it work. You get mics to everyone. And then putting it all together in post, and kind of making this thing happen all together. I think it's something that we're all kind of figuring out. It's a new thing for everyone. So, Alan, pop us out. And I want you to talk with the team about that kind of process, your involvement. Podcast at Alan's.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, Rose.
Nice tattoo.
This is, I gotta unmute that so I can see my head. Actually, Elliot, I'm gonna bring you back in. Give me a question.
This is something that you said the podcast network wanted to work on and branch out into. What was that process like for you? You know, you're used to producing a more kind of interview type thing, like, what was it like to produce an entire musical podcast experience?
It was fun and challenging. For BPN, it's something that we've been talking about for a long time, is getting into original content, and because it's like what podcasting is doing in general out in the world is bringing back kind of the golden age of radio, where families would sit around, you know, a long time ago, and just couldn't wait for War of the Worlds to come on. And some people thought it was real. And there's this sort of nostalgia that we wanted to bring back in the form of radio plays. And on top of all that, being a lover of theater, and then of course, Dori Berenstein, co-founder, partner, like, she and I really, really, we talked about this a lot, and we're like, it seems like a kind of a no-brainer in this day and age now, with the technology and with everything that's out there, to start developing shows in podcast form. And then, like, look at the success of Be More Chill, look at Six, the musical, and The Lightning Thief, Percy Jackson, the Percy Jackson musical. All of these things basically got stage life, big stage life, because of an online internet following that pre-existed the Broadway runs. Cool. So why not take that one step further and start it as a podcast? Because if we can workshop it, we see what works, we get feedback, and put it out there in the world, and let people, like, who don't have access to theater, who don't have access to come to New York, be able to listen to this and to access it. It seemed like the logical next step. Did I answer your question?
Yes, I think so. I mean, did you face any, like, unique challenges, like, for the next big hit musical that you helped produce for the Broadway Podcast Network? Like, what have you learned? And that could be for everyone. That could be for Katie and Harris as well. Like, and Tony gets, and Annie,
gets,
like, what?
He gets 8% is what the deal is.
What did you learn from the process that, because we're all figuring out how we are doing our, you know, how we're creating, how we're doing things in this kind of temporary new normal, right? And so a lot of those things we're going to carry forward. So what did you learn from this process?
Well, I learned very quickly there's no one size fits all. Case by case basis, you know, being sort of the overall, you know, you give me the podcast dad credit, being the father of the podcasts. Everybody likes to work in slightly different ways. And it's different when you're not going into a physical studio, which we still have that hasn't been used in months now, right? So allowing us to find multiple workflows for multiple people that will allow them to continue to record and to produce was a challenge in and of itself. And so through all of that, like, we've got several different platforms, StreamYard included, which is what we're using right now to serve out to all of our destinations. And there's actually new technology that I still haven't, that maybe we'll switch to, that I'm still testing out. And it depends. Like, Tony is very good technically. He's got the voice. He's got the mic set up already. His wife's got the sound studio.
That's why, like, I use this mic specifically today, because I want Neumann to endorse me.
Zoom in, Tony.
Zoom right in, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, Tony is coming from a background of like, literally, we sent him the script and we said, all right, we're going to record VO. And he goes, cool. And then there's people in the middle, there's people on the other end who have never held a USB mic before,
right,
and didn't know where to plug it in or how to change the settings. And we were also trying to merge, to get multi-tracked audio, which is very important because you want everybody on their own track. Right. While still being able to see people's faces, because that's how you can better act with people, is if you can actively listen and see their faces. So it was this wonderful challenge to be able to find the technology to give us the audio quality that we needed while giving us the video that we needed to get the performances out of what Harris wanted. And yeah, moving forward, the ramp up speed's a lot shorter, but I know exactly how we'll do it next. So super easy.
I love that. Katie, what about you?
Well, I think we were really blessed to have the tracks and the music pre-recorded. I think one of the things that we're seeing in this COVID age is a lot of technology issues in terms of music, playing music and singing along to it. And you certainly can't, it's very difficult to do it live and complicated in terms of not doing it live either. So I think that was the biggest thing that propelled us forward and was able to move so fast was that we had the music already and we didn't have to record it. I think that, you know, future musical podcasts will still need to probably go into a studio and record the music so that the quality of the sound is really amazing. I mean, we certainly got good sound quality in our dialogue from recorded homes, but I think that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to return to a studio setting, and in that, I think we'll be a better environment for recording the music.
Yeah.
We had to record two reprises, which were both very difficult, but also Rick Schnupp was the mixer and he did the sound design, and Rick won an Emmy this year for Free Solo. He did Midsommar. He did the sound for my film Beauty Mark. And so I knew, like, he would be able to fix anything. And so there was a lot of trouble in recording actual singing that he fixed. Mm-hmm. And it sounds so beautiful. You know, Rick, where it just put like a...
It really does.
Yeah. But so I think it's the combination of, like, Alan did a great job in actually recording it. And then Rick... put this like super glaze on it, and it's a combination of those things. I think so. You need someone who really knows how to mix and really knows how to master for it to really sound like how this sounds.
Yeah. Tony, did you learn anything from this process?
No.
not one thing.
Actually, someone touched on something. I think you had mentioned something, Alan. Forgive me if it was you, Elliot, or Alan. But, you know, what was the deal with, you know, sort of playing off of someone's visual and how important that was? And I'm going to just say, I'm going to beg to differ on that slightly, because as an actor, your responses are only authentic if you're hearing what the person is giving you. And so in that aspect, to me, it was a great reminder of listen. What is she giving me? Is my response authentic, or am I just saying a bunch of lines, you know? Mm-hmm. And so to me, not having a visual was a big help, because it really made me hone in on what that person was giving me so that my response was authentic. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, that is, I think that is totally like hit the nail on the head. Amazing. Like reminder for all of us. I think what we're all finding, speaking for myself in this time, is like when everything is kind of like stripped down bare bones, like this is your day-to-day existence without your kind of creature comforts and the things you do out in the world, you really like are like, okay, how do I operate just at base frequency, right? And base frequency acting is like listening and responding. Mm-hmm.
And it all comes back to that. It always does. Otherwise, you're not going to give anything that the audience believes is believable.
Yeah. It's interesting too, having that in mind, because it is an audio medium. You have the visual as an actor, but the audience doesn't have it. So it has to work audibly also for it to translate. And I think that the big story, the characters translate really well, and the heart of the story really is translated very well in this podcast. So
three
kudos
things though. I think it's believable text, number one, a ridiculous director, and a really talented cast. And if you have text, if you have all of those things if you just have believable dialogue in general, you already have a leg up. Because how many musicals or even straight plays do you go through and you say, like, she wouldn't have said that. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't have said that. That this conversation doesn't seem visceral, authentic, real, legit, whatever adjective you want to place on that. And I think that's why this thing reads so well off of a speaker.
Yeah,
is that the text is so good and our cast was so really, you know, present and talented. Mm-hmm. And then you have Harris who's guiding the ship, and you almost can't fuck it up.
I mean, I have to say the six of you were committed as if it wasn't somehow only radio or something. You know what I mean? I think that where they took it seriously, like, we are actually acting. This is actually a play, and we are actually doing this. Totally. Emotionally, everything, right? Believing the circumstances. I mean, you look at, you know, these things that are happening, the like Sondheim birthday and all this stuff, and you see very, very talented people and different degrees of how far they're going to truly commit to actually. Kelly O'Hara every time is giving you full stage unbelievable, right? Believing every circumstance. She doesn't care that she's in her living room. She is giving everything. And you see different degrees of how much people are truly willing to commit in that circumstance or not. And it's not about their talent. It's about their willingness to commit, right?
Totally.
And so it's interesting to see that scale of like from Kelly O'Hara to unnamed person.
Yeah. and we all strive to be Kelly O'Hara.
O'Hara, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Kelly O'Hara is one of my favorite blonde girls. You know who else is one of my favorite blonde girls? Caleb, can you pop back in?
That was a skilled transition.
That was a great transition.
Thank you.
Never said that before.
I'm an experienced broadcaster.
You're doing amazing.
Thank you. Well, to set this up a little bit while we wait for Caleb. Caleb is, you know, sees himself as a blonde girl from Ohio. And that's just part of his identity. And we have
so
a segment.
Do I.
You do?
Yeah, it's ironic.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. It makes sense, the connection that you all had right away. So Caleb has a segment where he talks about his thoughts on a really random topic. And so we're going to have a blonde girl moment right now.
I love that.
Can we hit that theme song while we wait for Caleb? Is he gone?
Alan said he was having internet issues, so I wonder whether that is something that we're hearing right now.
Is this like what we were talking about
broadcasting from home? Like, it cannot replace us forever.
I think figuring it out.
I also think, like, in terms of internet connection, like, there is a difference. Ah, there he is.
Am I back?
Caleb's here.
Hey.
Caleb's here.
I'm in.
I'm back.
Okay. Can you hit that, roll that beautiful bean footage?
Wait, which one? Blonde Girls?
Blonde Girls.
Maybe I'd better go home. Maybe I'd better go home.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Hey. Okay. So when I was listening to the Bleeding Love this week, in the first episode, it was a bit of the song was about canned food. So that really got me thinking about being in Ohio at my grandma's house. In the basement, there was always green beans, like, in the glass jar. A mix of other vegetables, always canned and ready to go. So I started thinking about the best canned food, in my opinion, this is an opinion piece, is Bush's canned beans. Iconic. Ooh. Number one canned food. I loved getting it in my thermos in middle school with a bit of a hot dog. So that is my number one canned food. And now we're going to round robin and everyone's going to say their number one canned food.
Before we do,
yes.
Before we do, can we just tell the people that we, Caleb and I, did not talk about what he was going to talk about, and what did I say before this? But roll that beautiful bean footage. I mean, we are connected. Okay. Anyway,
yes.
That's why we host the podcast. Anyway.
Yes. So,
do you want me to start?
Yes, please go.
I'm very partial to a canned pineapple slice.
Oh.
Round or chunk?
Round. Got to be round. Round so you can just plop it on your plate. Maybe put a spoonful of cottage cheese on top.
Yes. Mm. Do you pepper your cottage cheese?
It depends. Not with a pineapple, no.
Not necessary. Okay. Yeah. Tony, canned food number one. What is it?
Does almond butter count?
Is that a can? That's like a
jar.
It's plastic,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's not. That's,
it's got to be like tin.
It's really hard.
It is hard because I don't eat a lot of canned foods. But I remember as a child those Vienna sausages.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yes. Uh-huh.
There was something quite special about that. So I'm that's where I'm going.
Delicious.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Harris.
SpaghettiOs.
Okay.
And as an adult in quarantine, they're pasta rings that are organic from Whole Foods. Not that I'm eating them, but I do have a bunch of cans in my kitchen.
Now, do you go just SpaghettiOs or spaghetti and Franks?
So I've been a pescatarian for a year now, so no more Franks.
No more Franks.
SpaghettiOs, yeah.
Cool.
Katie?
I feel like I have to give a Bleeding Love shout out with canned fruit cocktail.
Canned fruit cocktail.
I mean, come on.
Fair enough.
It's like with the little maraschino cherries in it.
Yeah.
I love the cherries. The cherries were always my favorite.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're the best part.
Yeah,
something about canned fruit seems just not right for me. Mine is just baked beans. I can just eat that out of the, I'll just open the baked beans, and my kids too, with the bacon in it. Yeah, like that's my go-to.
It's so good. Highly my favorite. So I'm glad we all agree on, besides Tony, that we love the good canned food every now and then.
You're in there. Completely.
It's okay, because I like almond butter too.
Thank you. Thank you. I love almond butter.
I'll just put it in a can.
One other good canned food recommendation.
It is.
Le Sueur peas. They're these sweet green peas
that
are delicious.
And they're in like a fancy silver.
They look fancy. They're like a fancy.
Yes, they are. I absolutely know what you're talking about.
They're amazing. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Adam from Call Me Adam shouts out very important cranberry sauce, iconic canned food.
Yes. Thanksgiving.
You have to pour it out in the can so it still stays in the shape.
Yeah.
I have to backtrack. I've got to backtrack. It's not the Vienna sausages, although I'm partial to them. There's this Italian canned tuna that is, I can't remember who the producer is, but it's in this ridiculously fabulous olive oil. And it, I mean, you literally can eat it out of the can. A little salt.
I believe it's chicken of the sea.
Is that not?
Steve is saying, can we bring in Steve to let him answer?
Yeah, one second.
Steve,
Progresso tuna. You're talking about Progresso. All right, you can kick me out now.
I want to know what your favorite canned food is.
No, it would be Progresso tuna. That's
that's what Tony was referring to.
Yeah, they have the best. I'm Italian.
I am as well. I am as well, Steve. That's why we get along.
Italian kitchen. And we always had Progresso tuna. It was the only tuna fish we had in the house.
Mm. There you go.
Mm-hmm. I'm putting it on my list.
In olive oil.
Yes, absolutely. Forget the water thing.
Yeah, forget the water
nonsense.
I lived in LA for 8 years, and it was like incredibly hard to find. You'd have to go out to this, like there was a deli, an Italian deli in Santa Monica that had it. So every time I'd come home, I would bring two things back with me. Progresso canned tuna. Oh, little pastina too. Like they don't have pastina out there.
Yep.
And Taylor ham. I'm a big Taylor ham fan.
Taylor ham's good.
Yeah.
Not for the pescatarians, but
yeah, not for the pescatarians. But anytime you put meat in a burlap sap, it's
it's so yummy.
All right, I'm gonna go back. Watch. You can bring Tony back.
Okay, Steve.
Thank you, Steve, for the Progresso. That's good. That's good to know.
Yes.
That good. Italian tuna.
Now I got to get some.
Right. And now I'm like, wait, Omri's going to Whole Foods. I got to put it on the list.
Order now. Let's keep the questions going. Yes.
Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. Kayla's going to do some rapid fire questions to bring us home.
So really quick, no thought necessary.
Oh, wait, Arthur. Sorry. Arthur, the composer, is listening and he says, peach cobbler from Boy Scout trips.
Cobbler. I do love a canned peach.
Wait, there it is. That.
Oh, everyone's hoping.
Art, you should be on this. You should be on this call.
Yeah, why aren't you on this call? Yeah, Art. You were invited a million times.
Art, pop in. Come in.
I'm gonna send you the link.
Okay. So these are just quick questions, easy, no thought necessary. After quarantine is finished, what New York restaurant are you dying to go to for brunch?
We'll go Katie Harris, Tony.
Oh, wait, I'm texting Art.
Art says it's amazing in the woods. So I think that means he doesn't have internet. So I only half heard the question because he's like texting me.
Your New York restaurant that you want to go to for brunch after quarantine.
Oh, I'm ready now. So I love 11 Madison Park, and it's at risk. It's at risk. And that would be a killer for me. It's my top restaurant in New York.
If anyone hasn't seen the, like, what is it, 8 days out or 7 days out on Netflix, it's a documentary series about 7 days to the opening of the new 11 Madison Park, along with other like big events. But the 11 Madison Park episode is amazing.
It's such a phenomenal restaurant.
Great. It's great.
Amazing. Yeah. And when they came out with the new menu, when was that, Elliot? Like, 5 years ago, something?
I want to say very recent.
Oh, I don't know. Anyway.
I consider 5 years recent.
Oh, okay. Anyway, it's amazing. Hopefully they'll survive, and then I'll go for brunch.
I just saw an episode of Sex and the City at 11 Madison Park.
Mm. But that was old. That was a Danny Meyer 11 Madison.
Yes. But the, yeah, yeah. I was like, oh my God. Anyway, Harris.
Good Enough to Eat is the best place in the city. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's so good. I love
that place. It's so good. I know.
I've been there with Caleb.
Yep. Yeah.
So strawberry lumberjack pancakes.
Lumberjack, yes. Yes. That's what I ate, bacon, but yes, all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
We've been there with your mom.
Yeah, we did.
Aw, sweet.
Tony?
Yeah, 11 Madison Park. I'm trying to think of like where would I go. I mean, I'm a kind of a frittata freak, so if you can like tip me off to a good frittata, I'll show up easy.
Hashtag frittata freak. Hashtag oh my God!
Our favorite visitors.
Frittata. Special guest.
Where is he going to go eat, Alan? Oh, now, where are you going to go eat? Let's see what he says.
Say hello to the listeners.
Nope, we're getting stink eye.
No. All right, next question. So we're trying to pass time, but I'm trying to make it like,
I can't hear anything you're saying, by the way. He's got the headphones on.
Trying to pass time, but without technology, would you rather pass time with puzzles,
books,
or drawing?
What was puzzles. The last one? Drawing?
Drawing, puzzles. Like sketching.
Oh, drawing. Oh.
Yeah.
My computer's sitting on top of my unfinished puzzle right here.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Yes. How many pieces?
This one's 750 because the last one we did was 300 and my son said it was too easy. So we went up and I also have 1,000 waiting for us. But because I'm so busy with the Broadway Podcast Network and Bleeding Love, I haven't done anything to it.
Mm-hmm. That's Bleeding Love on the Broadway Podcast Network.
Sorry, not sorry.
Harris, what about you?
And he's back. Bye.
So my boyfriend and I, we did a puzzle before this. It was like 300 and we had fun. And then we bought a 500 piece puzzle. And then it was sat there for 2 months, like just kind of sort of being done. And then we put it away. We didn't finish it.
So then you would go to reading?
Yes, I'm going to choose reading. I'm going to choose reading.
Okay.
My boyfriend's a painter. And so like sketching is like his job, you know? So
sure.
I'll go with reading.
Reading.
Tony, what about you?
I would say for me personally, reading, but my family is, specifically my wife and my daughter, are like puzzle freaks. Mm. I participate to kind of be with them, but it would not be my go-to thing. But we're like, they're dealing with these freaking like 1,500-piece puzzles, and I just kind of glaze.
Very advanced.
And your daughter's like 5, and she can 5?
She's 8.
Oh, she's 8. But still, that's impressive for a 1,500-piece puzzle.
Oh, she's full on. She's no joke.
Wow.
So I'm there more as a spectator than a participant.
I love that.
Support. Annie, would you rather do puzzles, read a book, or do some sketching, drawing? Can she?
This is awesome.
But she always has like a great smile.
Yes.
Just the best smile, like, the best attitude ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on. Okay.
So, or answer in the chat, Annie.
We'll speak for you.
We'll yes. The next question is your favorite spring flower, kind of like in the same Bleeding Love, that flower that you love to see in the springtime.
Me again?
Yes.
Yeah, just
lilac.
Oh, beautiful. Yes.
They smell amazing. And I have a ton right now.
Wait, I'll be right back. You ask someone else. Hold on.
Okay.
All right, Tony, favorite spring flower.
Spring flower. Gerber daisies aren't springish, are they? Not really.
We'll take it.
I don't know shit about flowers, so sure.
They're not.
Are they summer?
Well, I'm a Gerber daisy freak. That's like
here comes his flower.
I've been working so hard on this and I need to show it off to the
it's
world.
Beautiful.
You put one ice cube in a week?
No ice cubes. Oh, how do you it's all backwards.
It's beautiful.
Right? And it keeps going. Look, there's more buds. It can't stop. The world is ending, but this plant can't stop. It's so beautiful.
Can't stop.
I really want to put in a like a little flower box on my fire escape when I get back to New York. Cause I want lavender. God damn it.
Yes. Yes.
We have We have irises all over our yard. So I guess by default, that's when I know they're out, I guess spring has arrived.
Spring.
Yeah.
Just two more questions. Last, second one is, what do you dislike most? Spiders?
Everything.
Snakes or sharks?
Ooh. That's me, right? I have the answer. Yeah. Shoot. All of the above. Answer D. But I would have to say spiders probably first.
Hate spiders.
Harris?
I don't hate any of them. I have to say I don't hate them.
Imagine answer.
Yes.
I guess like what scares me the most? Then maybe is that the question?
Yes.
I guess like a surprise snake that you weren't expecting is pretty scary.
Yeah, snake in the grass. Yeah.
Let's go to Annie. What are you most afraid of? Spiders, snakes, or sharks?
I was just down in New Orleans doing a new series for Fox called Filthy Rich. And we were in the bayou at dawn, and I had done several takes of the scene, and I was okay. And then the makeup artist came in to like wet my brow or powder my brow, and she saw a spider behind me, and she said, "Oh," and I was like, "No, no, that's set decoration." And then it moved.
So I would not be on that set.
No.
So the takes after that freaking sucked because there was a real spider dangling in front of my freshly powdered. So yeah, I would say spiders because I think snakes you might see coming, but spiders are so they're so diaphanous, they're so creepy.
Yeah,
but Annie, there could be a surprise snake. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, a surprise snake.
I get it.
Well, I'm on board with that too. It's all creepy.
All creepy.
Are creepy.
Wait, Annie, while we have you, let's go back to the questions from earlier. Because I want your take.
Perfectly streaming now.
Yeah.
What?
Annie, what's your favorite canned food?
Canned food?
Yeah, what's your favorite?
Oh my God, I was just cooking this and I had extra and I put it in a Tupperware and I went, okay, this looks like dog food.
What was it?
Oh no.
And it was
so close, so close.
Oh, corn meat
hash.
Okay, that's good. What?
I don't know even what was said, but I'm.
It was corn.
Corn beef hash.
Corn beef hash. Yeah. Corn beef hash.
It's too cute. I can't handle it.
I know, right?
You can. I was like, okay, this is like dog food. Okay.
Corn beef hash.
We need to upgrade Annie's Wi-Fi.
So can we get a GoFundMe for that?
Yeah.
Tony, what are you scared of? Which one?
I was young in Galveston, Texas, and got pulled under by a really strong riptide and kind of like was missing for, I don't know, many a second from my father's. I slipped off a boogie board. So I've always been very scared of like ocean stuff.
Me too.
If I was in the water, so like I'd have to go with shark because I get very angry when I see a spider and I can attack it. You know what I'm saying? Like I physically get angry. Snakes? I don't know. I haven't really been I grew up in New Mexico and we had snakes all over the place, so I'm not immune to it. But that water disconnect thing, it's that hell's under my feet.
It's when you can't see. It's the scary part. It's so deep. Yes.
You really should include jellyfish in this question.
Jellyfish?
Yes.
No.
I would have chosen it. I would have chosen jellyfish. Because I relate to the ocean thing. I don't like water.
No.
Yeah. I don't either.
No water.
I don't like sand. I like the water. I don't want to be at a beach.
Yes. Okay. Wrapping it up, there's always these moments in our job when we have that moment you're like, I can't believe this is my job. Like, I can't, like, you're so excited, you're upset. It's just that moment you were, it's just like mind blown. I can't believe this is my job. When have you had that moment in your career, Katie?
Mm. Oh, wow. God, multiple times. But I guess I went to the Tonys a couple years ago, but it, probably 6 years ago now. And I got to be in the press room, which was actually really fun because I got to be with everyone at the Tonys. And so that was one of those moments. So I was like, wow, this is my job. And then I got to, went to the party at the Plaza afterwards and the whole thing. It was really fun. And I look forward to many, many more.
Yes.
Cheers. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Harris?
The first thing that comes to mind is the premiere of my movie at the LA Film Festival, like being there while it was happening, like was so extraordinary. Was like, I can't believe this is happening. But another one, just to bring it back to Annie, was that night, the hair night with Annie on Broadway, like, because I was being basically this vehicle for other people to come out and sing. And so I was on stage the whole night, often alone, watching one amazing performer sing after the other in this huge Broadway house. And it was just an extraordinary evening that I couldn't believe the whole time was happening, including when Annie sang Frank Mills. It was just her and me on stage.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Tony?
Two. Can I answer two?
Yeah. Please.
I think fronting Queen at Queen Elizabeth's Golden Jubilee. So I was... I sent Bohemian Rhapsody with Queen, and Phil Collins was playing on a second kit behind us, and 200 million people were watching.
Yeah,
that was probably pretty big.
That might have been a moment.
That was a moment. But so was opening night of Superstar, the revival of JCS. Mm-hmm. Weber brought 160 people over from Really Useful, because it was his first Broadway show, and it was an amazing, this after party thing. They had like angels hanging from the Hammerstein Ballroom, like women, like just all like just hanging from the ceiling.
Just performers, and, like angel performers?
Like angels, just angels.
Real angels, Ellie. Yeah.
Maybe they were. He's quite a wealthy guy. He could do a lot.
He brought them in.
Yeah, I mean, it was like $1 million opening night party.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was glamorously cool. Anyway, those are probably two.
I mean, those are pretty huge. I really want to hear what Annie's moment is.
I know. Yeah,
totally. I know. I'm sure it's amazing.
Absolutely.
No, the career she's had, like, I want to know.
Unbelievable.
Well, while we're waiting for Annie to hopefully pop back on, where can people find Bleeding Love?
You can find it wherever podcasts are found. So you can go to iTunes, you can go to Broadway Podcast Network, you can go, what is this?
bpn.fm/bleeding love.
Yes, get a kitty. Yes.
but also, really, sorry.
No, please also go to iTunes, and because it's the only place that you can actually rate and review.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that really matters for us in this stage to have people rate and review. Go to iTunes and do that.
It's a huge help. You know, we always do our plea at the end of every episode for everyone to go, you know, rate, give us 5 stars, write a review, subscribe on iTunes. But it makes a huge difference for podcasters. It's the way that we kind of get bumped up in the algorithm, and people can like find us more easily if we have those reviews that help from everyone. So it's something that you know, while you're listening to Bleeding Love, you can go to Equity One, subscribe while you're listening, and then you do the same thing for Bleeding Love. You know,
focus. You got to be there in the world. You got to focus. Do it afterwards.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
And I actually think, to be honest, I think there is a confusion. Like, people with iPhones have a podcast app.
Yes. As
it's not your iTunes app. It's not your music app. Right. You have a purple podcast app on your phone.
Depends on your iOS version.
Uh-oh. Yeah, fair enough.
Oh,
because,
no, but you're right.
No, It is. Yeah. Thank you, Tony. Yeah. Like it, because in the recent upgrade, I think it was iOS 13. Don't quote me on that. I think it was the upgrade of 13. Apple, because of the success of podcast, Apple pulled podcast out of iTunes and made iTunes its own thing and podcast its own thing.
It's now so what I, it's I, like it's iMusic or music now.
I think it's
phone.
Just music and podcast. There's no iTunes anymore. Yeah. So and on correct. Desktop too, on your, on OS X.
And on your computer
right.
as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
There's no I in music, Tony.
There is in my house, Paris.
But there is an I in Bleeding Love.
Yes.
And you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. I think let's go ahead and give everyone socials if they care to give them where people can find you and follow your adventures.
Campfire Films PR with a K.
Campfire with a K.
Campfire with a K. Films PR is usually where you can find me. But Bleeding Love musical, please.
Yes.
I'm Harris Duran on Twitter and Instagram. And it's Bleeding Love musical on everything except for
Twitter,
which is Bleeding Love Muse, because it doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit.
Twitter is like always like really giving you blue balls with yeah. the handle. It's mm-hmm. like, come on.
Yeah.
Anyway. Tony.
My website's my name, TonyVincent.com. My Instagram handle is the official Tony Vincent. I don't know what my Facebook or Twitter account username or whatever that you can search. It's on my website if you want to get there.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you search it, you can find it. But anyway.
Just go to that website.
Yeah.
And the legend Annie Golden, you can find at the Annie Golden on Instagram at the very least. And I'm yes. sure she has other channels there. But check her out, and we loved having her here, and we loved having all of you here. Thank you so much for spending your Saturday happy hour with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. This was really fun.
Yeah,
it was really fun. It's our pleasure. You can find our podcast Equity One at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at Equity One _ on Twitter.
Send us an email at equityonepodcast@gmail.com and let us know what you think. And as always, please rate and review. Give us 5 stars. It helps other people find us as well. Elliot, yeah. where can we find you on the socials?
You can find me at Elliot Maddox on everything. Caleb?
You can find me at Caleb Dickey on everything.
And until next time, cheers!
Cheers!
Clink! Clink!
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.